Mediterranean heavenly planets. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So I read this introduction to chapter 24. This chapter describes the planet Rahu, which is 10,000 yojanas, 80,000 miles, below the sun. And it also describes Atala and the other lower planetary systems. Rahu is situated below the sun and the moon. It is between these two planets and the Earth. When Rahu conceals the sun and moon, eclipses occur, either total or partial, depending on whether Rahu moves in a straight or curving way. Below Rahu, by another 1 million yojanas, are the planets of the Siddhas, Charanas, Vidyaharas, and below these are the planets of the Yaksh, such as I guess there's a mistake here. Below Rahu by another 1 million yojanas are the planets of Siddhas, Charanas and Vidyadharas, and below these are the planets such as Yakshaloka and Rakshaloka. Below these planets is the Earth, and 70,000 yojanas below the Earth are the lower planetary systems, Atala, Vitala, Shrutala, Tatala, Mahatala, Rashatala and Patala. Demons and Rakshasas live in these lower planetary systems with their wives and children, always engaged in sense gratification and not fearing their next births. The sunshine does not reach these planets, but they are illuminated by the jewels fixed upon the hoods of snakes. Because of these shining gems, there is practically no darkness. Those living in these planets do not become old or diseased. They are not afraid of death from any cause, but the time factor, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In the planet Atala, a yawning of a demon has produced three kinds of women called Shvarini, independent, Kamini, lusty, and Pumschali, very easily subdued by men. Below Atala is the planet Vitala, wherein Lord Shiva and his wife Gauri reside. Because of their presence, a kind of gold is produced called Hataka. Below Vitala is the planet Sutala and the abode of Bali Maharaj, the most fortunate king. Bali Maharaj was favored by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vamana Dev, because of his intense devotional service. The Lord went to the sacrificial arena of Bali Maharaj and begged from him 3 paces of land, and on the plea, the Lord took from him all of his possessions. When Bali Maharaj agreed to all this, the Lord was very pleased, and therefore the Lord serves as his doorkeeper. In the description of Bali Maharaj's, the description of Bali Maharaj appears in the 8th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. When the Supreme Personality of Godhead offers a devotee material happiness, this is not his real favor. The demigods, who are very puffed up by their material opulence, pray to the Lord only for material happiness, not knowing anything better. Devotees like Prahlad Maharaj, however, do not want material happiness, not to speak of material happiness. They don't even want liberation from material bondage. Although One can achieve this liberation simply by chanting the holy name of the Lord, even with improper pronunciation. Below Sutala is the planet Tatala, the abode of the demon Maya. This demon is always materially happy because he is favored by Lord Shiva. But he cannot achieve spiritual happiness at any time. Below Tatala is a place called Mahatala, where there are many snakes with hundreds and thousands of hoods. Below Mahatala is Rashatala. Below that is Patala, where the serpent Vasuki lives with his associates. End of introduction. So text one. And two. There's no purport on one. I'll read one and two. Jadadash Taraneyam Mandalam Pratapasthat Visharatho Yoganyutam Achakshati Dvadasha Sahasram Samasa Treodasha Sahasram Rahoya Parvani Tat Vayabadhana Krit Vairanya Banda Sutya Chandra Man So Abit Tabati. Translation to text 1 and 2. Sri Sukadeva Goswami said, "My dear King, some historians, the speakers of the Puranas, say that 10,000 yojanas, 80,000 miles below the sun, is the planet known as Rahu, which moves like one of the stars. The presiding deity of that planet, who is the son of Shimhika, is the most abominable of all asuras. But although he is completely unfit to assume the position of the demigod, of a demigod or planetary deity, he has achieved that position by the grace of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Later I shall speak further about him." Text number two. "The sun globe, which is a source of heat, extends for 10,000 yojanas, 80,000 miles. The moon extends for 20,000 yojanas, 160,000 miles. And Rahu extends for 30,000 yojanas, 240,000 miles. Formerly, when nectar was being distributed, Rahu tried to create distension between the sun and the moon by interposing himself between them. Rahu is inimical towards both the sun and the moon, and therefore he always tries to cover the sunshine and moonshine on the dark moon day and the full moon night." Purport. As stated herein, the sun extends for 10,000 yojanas, and the moon extends for twice that, or 20,000 yojanas. The word dvadasha should be understood to mean twice as much as 10 or 20. In the opinion of Vijayadvaja, the extent of Rahu should be twice that of the moon, or 40,000 yojanas. However, to reconcile this apparent contradiction to the text of the Bhagavatam, Vijayadvaja cites the following quotation concerning Rahu. "Rahu Shama Ravindam Tu Mandala Tui Gunotikam." This means that Rahu is twice as large as the moon, which is twice as large as the sun. This is the conclusion of the commentator Vijayadvaja. O Magyan Tibirandasha Chananjanan Shalakayota Kshura Militandina Tashmai Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Garatha Shivashari Gaur Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hari Hari. Hari Rama, Hari Rama, Rama Rama, Hari Hari. So here talking about the different planets, specifically the lower planet, the sun and the moon is also. But it gives a little bit of history of Rahu. which is an inauspicious planet. It's almost invisible, it's like a shadow. During the eclipse you can actually see. You can see through it a little bit, it's a bit transparent, so it's kind of a subtle planet. And also Prabhupada suggested, when they were trying to make the moon shot, that they actually didn't go to the moon, but they may have gone to Rahu, he said, instead. Because that may be more of a barren planet or something. It may have the rocks or no life. Anyway, maybe a portion of Rahu they went to, he suggested. So this Rahu, it's mentioned in the story of when they're churning the ocean of milk, and Mohini Murti was distributing nectar. So first she distributed to the demigods, and this Rahu demon, he saw, I'm going to get that nectar, so he sneaked in between, they're all sitting in line, so he went in the demigod line, and he sat between the sun and the moon gods, and he wasn't detected at first. But so he took some of that nectar from Rohini, but before he could swallow it, he was detected, and I think Vishnu cut his head off. Anyway, they killed him, cut his head off. But the nectar had already gone down to there, so this part remained immortal. So therefore Rahu planet is said to be like his head, just the head of Rahu. And the like the eclipses, it said that he opens his mouth and he swallows. But it mentions here he's actually a bit too far away to do that. But it appears like that from our angle of vision. When we see the eclipse, it looks like he's being swallowed. Anyway, he covers up and he gives a lot of trouble to the to everyone. When the eclipses are inauspicious, everybody knows that, even me. But anyway, because he got the nectar, he's remaining eternal in that situation. And so, like, he always gives trouble to the sun and the moon. He's like their determined enemy. So, all these planets are moving in six fixed orbits. We've been reading in the previous chapters. But the sun rises and illuminates everywhere. When the sun rises in the morning, we see the eastern horizon. We chant that song, Udi Lara Aruna Pora Papagi Bijamani Goraya Manichagi, morning song. The sun is right. Udi La Arun. Arun means that sun chariot, the planet. I think the planet is a chariot. It appears that they said that the sun, the chariot is the planet of the sun. Anyway, when it arrives, it's got horses, and so many semi-gods and demigods are assisting and offering prayers there. There's a whole entourage there. And they're driving. I think they're looking back at the sun god, because the driver's in the front. But that driver's name is Aruna. So just before the sun rises, and when we see in the east, that saffrony color, that is Arun. So he's coming first. He's driving the chariot of the horses. Then the sun actually rises. So there, the sun illuminates the whole universe. Without the sun, nobody can live. Without the sunlight, everything like comes to life. And it's just the way that Krishna's planned it. Everything comes to life when the sun, at nighttime, everything kind of follows the flower. Of course, you get night blooming flowers also, but generally the flowers in general, and they close up at night, and everybody stops functioning, everybody stops their work, and then at the end of the day, and then for someone else, the opposite side of the sun, someone else is waking up and beginning their activities, and then the flowers are coming out, everything's functioning. So like this, cyclic changes are taking place, and everybody's in different locations. They're all waking or rising or performing their duties, or midday they're doing something, and the opposite side is midnight, they're probably all fast asleep. So in this way the world is going on with so much variety, and this keeps everyone completely absorbed in the activities of material nature. The three modes of material nature is moving everything, so constant, everything's in constant flux, and it's just carrying everyone along with it, so therefore nobody's really questioning any, you know, about the real purpose of life, because the material energy, the three modes of material, they never ever stop, they never cease, even for a fraction of a second. You can never catch Maya out, she suddenly stops. But factually, that's all that's happening here, is this movement of the three modes of material nature is going on since time immemorial. And everybody's so enamored by it that nobody even is asking the question. So without the sun, there's one sun in every universe, he says, and Prabhupada says, that illuminates the entire universe, but then according to the different situations, we get day and night. So we can't live without the sun, and similarly the moon shine is there, and we can't live without the moon also, because the moon, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, I am the moon, I become the moon, and I supply the juice of life to all the vegetables, to all the nice juicy vegetables and fruits and everything we get. That is produced by the moon, all the juicy, succulent, opulent things, that juice is coming from the moon. And therefore Prabhupada also uses that as an example to defeat the moon landing project, how it's just rock and dust or something like that. Prabhupada said, here we understand that the moon, by the arrangement of Krishna, is the source of all juicy things, all vegetation. He's the king, he's the lord of all that, yet his planet is completely barren and dry. He's not the king of this planet, but we have juicy things. But why the moon wouldn't be full of juicy things if he's the king, he's the king of juice, supplying the juice of life. Another piece of logic Prabhupada uses to defeat the arguments. So he supplies the juice of life, he supplies the air of life, therefore in the chapter the Purushottam Yoga in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is describing how he is, I am the moon, I am the sun, I am the light, how he is manifested, and we're completely dependent on Krishna, all of these, to eat juicy food, otherwise we'll die if we don't have juicy food. So by the grace of Krishna we are living, because we're getting these nice foods out. By the grace of Krishna we have the sunshine, and then we can go about our work. By the grace of the different airs we're able to function properly. So it's all by Krishna's grace that we know we're even able to live properly. And then he says, apart from that, just keeping you alive and supplying everything you need, this is the 15th chapter, then I'm also sitting in your heart, I'm also directing you at every moment also. So I'm supplying all your necessities, and I'm directing you also. And even beyond that, beyond my sitting in your heart, I'm sitting in my own abode, so you can come back home to me, back to God, back to Golok. Enjoy with me there. Completely. So no matter what consciousness you have, whether you're a materialist or you're a transcendentalist, Krishna is your protector and savior and maintainer. Shara Akshara, Krishna, because There's two classes of people, the Shara, the Akshara, the what is it? Fallible. Prabhupada used that word. Fallible and the infallible. We are the conditioned living entities are fallible. They're subject to the material laws. The infallible are those who are liberated. They're not affected by material nature. So you get two classes of main Krishnas, the fallible and the infallible. For the fallible, I'll keep them alive anyway in different bodies by supplying all these necessities they need. And the infallible also, I got the whole creation of the spiritual world. You can all come back to Godhead if you're not already there. And so both materially and spiritually, because I'm beyond, then Krishna says, Krishna says, as a super soul, I enter into the heart of everyone, I enter into the atoms, and therefore I maintain it in every form. Then Krishna says, because I am celebrated both beyond the fallible and the infallible. This means beyond the conditioned state and the liberated state, beyond Maya and from beyond Brahman. Krishna says, I'm different. Because I am different from the eternal and the temporary, therefore I am celebrated as that supreme person, Purushottam. Krishna likes his name very much. Purushottam. Purusha means person, and Uttama means top person. So Krishna really likes his name. I am Purushottam, the highest of all, or that person who makes all others go down. Because I am celebrated and is beyond the fallible and the infallible. This means beyond the infallible means the super soul and all the different incarnations of Godhead. I'm different from all of those also. Therefore I am the Purushottam, because I am the original personality of Godhead, Krishna, the Adi Purusha. So therefore Krishna maintains his pure devotees in Goloka. So in any situation, whether in the material, you're liberated, or you're in the Krishna Bhakta, then Krishna's got a place for you. He's so kind. So even Bali Maharaj, he represents the anger of bhakti of Atmanivedanam, complete surrender, because he surrendered everything to Bali. To Vamana Deva. He gave everything. So he's glorious. Or he is celebrated as he representing that anger of bhakti, the nine angas of bhakti. So complete surrender is Bali Maharaj. Although his wife, during that whole affair when Bali was arrested and he surrendered everything. Then people were offering prayers. His wife said, "What a stupid husband I got." She didn't mind criticizing him for the higher purpose. My husband thinks he can surrender everything. He's got the universe. He thinks he can surrender everything to Vamanadev. He's still in an illusion. He owns something or he possesses something. He's such an illusion. I like the way she spoke, very frank, pointing out the essence of Bali Maharaj. He said he was still identifying himself as the Lord of the planet, so he could surrender. But what do we have actually? Everything is Krishna's. So this is the surrendering is just the beginning process. Oh, I remember there will be some prikram somewhere. And Jayapataka Maharaj is answering the question. Someone asked how is Ramananda Roy, he comes to the point, Sarvadanam Parityaja Mamikam, you should surrender to Krishna. Mahaprabhu said, good. Maya is still external, we've got further to go. So someone asked Jayapataka Maharaj that question. Hey, you know, we're thinking that, you know, complete surrender, we're always talking about complete surrender, then a pure devotee is completely surrendered. So why did Mahaprabhu say it still is a bit external, you can go further, there's more? We thought that surrendering everything was the ultimate, it's the ninth anger of bhakti, you and without surrendering, actually all the other eight angas of bhakti, they don't function. The Shravana, Kirtana, Smara, Vandana. If surrender is not there, they won't function properly. Of course, in this age, if the holy name is not there, also they won't function, because that's the life of all the different angas of bhakti, the holy name. So, what does it say? Oh yeah, he asked, yeah. Someone asked Abhitaka Maharaj a question. How come Mahaprabhu rejected? He said, go on and more, explain something further than surrender. And Maharaj said the same thing. He said, because we're still identifying ourselves as having possessions. And I've got something to surrender to Krishna. Even my own body. Even Bali said, it's my own, I've still got my head. But factually also his head wasn't his, it's also Krishna's. But the act of surrender, the attitude, the mood was there. We still think we have something to offer to Krishna. So therefore, it's, when you surrender, then you can, then you get more advanced. All these different devatas, they surrender to the Lord. In as much as they understand their position, they're His servants, and they should serve Him. And they're acting as universal supervisors. And they're doing a good job regulating the universe. And there are different, that, you know, they see mostly to the maintainers, the heat, the light, water, air. We need all these things. So you've got all these devatas and other lesser. But Prabhupada said actually every point of your body, there is a devata controlling. There's 33 crores of devatas. Every point, he said, there's a devata controlling. And yeah, so then, and for the, see generally the demigods are dealing with Artha, economic development, because they, as they're seen, universal controlling, there's a Artha. So then you have Dharma, then you have different sages representing Dharma. Gautam, Kannada, both. Different, you have in India, you have your Gotra. If you're born in India, you get a Gotra. Gotra means sage. Who your family takes knowledge from, your lineage takes knowledge generally from that sage. What's your Gotra, Radhika? You know your Gotra, family Gotra? You don't know. Who else? Anybody know? You know your Gotra? Bharadwaj. Bharadwaj Gotra. Family Gotra. Yes? Huh? Shiv, okay. Shiv Thakur. Oh, yes, Achyuta. At the time of initiation, we get Gotra. Oh, we don't actually, it's not given. But it's understood we take initiation into the Gotra line because into the Achyuta Gotra, because Krishna is Achyuta. He's the infallible Lord, so we're getting initiation into the line of Achyuta. So then we get Krishna's knowledge, right? He's maintained, he's given us bhakti. The knowledge that comes from him is bhakti. All different types of knowledge actually, but specifically bhakti is coming from him. And the others, they all deal with different types of knowledge. Therefore you get these different six philosophies and Kama Mantra and Kannada and Jaimini and so they're doing really important work, they think, and they are, for people, you know, who want to stay in the material world. There's a nice description of this in the it's from the Hari Bhakti Vilas. It's mentioned in the Ajna Padati. It's a dhyana, Krishna, Radha Krishna Dhyanam, or Krishna Dhyanam. And first it describes the beauty of Vrindavan and the trees and touchstone. And then it describes Krishna, black, like lamp black, very deep black, like sapphire. His complexion is, and he's in a jeweled throne beneath the copper brick tree, very relaxed, fingers are on his flute, and he's just blowing the fifth note very casually, throwing his sidelong glances around to his devotees. And description from head to toe, it's a meditation. And then different grades of devotees around there. The demigods are up the front. They're the big guns, right? The demigods. So they're up the front, offering their prayers for Artha. They're in charge of Artha, universal maintenance and development. So they're all there offering their prayers. And then the sages, they're in charge of Dharma, establishing the codes of Dharma. So they're a little bit back, the next row behind. But they're offering their prayers also. Because they're establishing Dharma in this material world where people are living, and they should follow Dharma, otherwise it's sinful. You have two things in this world, Dharma and sin, pap and punya. So we're advised by the Shastras to perform punya, that will make us happy. And we're not advised to perform pap because it will make us unhappy. So these sages, they're writing the codes of religion for mankind. And they're disseminating that knowledge also in the particular lines. And they think we're doing really universal welfare work. If you're really, really broad-minded person, you really want to do a lot of help for people, and you're really, really interested in religion, then you can take your birth eventually as one of these big sages, and you can be a universal. I really mean it. I really feel it, that I'm interested in everybody's welfare, and I'm really doing good work. But it's all a breath of Vishnu, you know. All this, you know. We're big demigods. We're doing great stuff. We're big sages, and then it's all finished within one breath of Vishnu, half a breath. But anyway, they're there because the people have these positions. And then beyond that, you get the Gandavas and the Siddhas, and Gandavas, the Apsaras. They're in pursuit of calm, enjoyment, material enjoyment. You see, whenever you hear the Gandavas and the Apsaras, they're always coming. There's a big concert happens, and the dancers are singing. They come for Krishna's festivals and things like that. All these different, from different places in the universe, different planets, they all come, and they used to, this was 5,000 years ago, they were all generally always present when there was a sacrifice going on and Krishna was there performing. You read the Krishna book many times. But they come and they make the atmosphere nice and light, because it's all dancing and music and playing. And so that's, they just enjoy like that. So that is a representative of karma, the Apsara, the Gandhavas, etc. Dharma, Artha, Karma, Moksha. Then you get the Mokshas. Well, that's represented by Shukadeva Goswami. He was after Moksha. He didn't want to come out of the womb. What's the point of coming out the womb? I'm satisfied in here. If I go outside, I'll be satisfied. At least I'm not getting any trouble, so much trouble in the womb. I might as well stay here. Brahma, Buddha, Prashanatma, satisfied. So he represents Mukti, the aftermath, the Chakumaras. They're great bhaktas now, they became great bhaktas, but in the beginning, they were after liberation, for Kumaras. We'll keep ourselves like five-year-old kids, then we won't be agitated by the material movements. So they're great, you know, vast knowledge, not at all. It's completely self-realized. One day they want to go to Vaikuntha. Let's go and have a look at Vaikuntha. What for? They knew Vishnu was there. There's a local Vaikuntha. They knew Vishnu was there. What do you want to go there? We're satisfied here, we go there, we're satisfied. What does it matter? Oh, we go for a picnic anyway, just to have a look. So they went for a picnic. Doesn't really matter where we go, we're self-satisfied. But when they went there, then fragrance from Krishna's feet when they approached the Lord's lotus feet. There was a tulsi and chandan, and his body smells of agar and musk, because his mother bathes him in musk scented water every day. It's all these nice scents coming from the tulsi of Krishna's feet. And they said, how is it possible? We're feeling more ananda than our Brahmananda, than our Brahma Bhuta Prashanatma, our meditation into on the soul. We're getting more bliss from our nose sense of smell, which is a material object and a material sense, than our Atma, self-satisfied Atma. How is it possible? So then they realize the truth that there is spiritual variegatedness. It's not all one. That actually Vishnu Krishna is the transcendental person with senses and relationships, and everything becomes on a spiritual platform. So then they became bhaktas. But they represent, when we talk of moksha, those who represent, they use this as an example in Bhagavatam, the four Kumaras, they're after moksha, and Sukadeva Goswami after moksha. So then you have your Dharma, Artha, Karma, Moksha representatives all around Krishna. He's the central figure. Then you get different rasas going on. Or you get the little cows are coming and jumping and playing, and Shantaras generally. Generally Shantaras. Some people say Vatsalaras because they give milk like mothers to Krishna. But anyway, the animals and Shantaras hopping around, little bulls are butting each other, and then you get the big bulls there. They come slowly wandering in with their big humps, heavy, like a heavy burden, and they flare out their nostrils and get the scent of Krishna's body, and the cows, they pick up Krishna's fifth note. He's playing the fifth note on his flute, and there he is. And then you get the Krishna's friends there, and they're all jumping and frolicking and playing around and playing instruments and whirling sticks and whatever they do. They're representing the Shakyaras. Then you get the elderly gopis and gopas are there also, representing the Vatsalaras. Then you get the young gopi girls representing the Madhudyarasa, and they're approaching Krishna, and they try not to look at him, but they can't stop looking, so they half close their eyes so they can, and their bodies are trembling and shaking, and they're trying really hard to control it, but they've got bells on their waist and they start jingling, and they're trying to control their emotions. But so these are representing the conjugal, and Krishna starts throwing his arrows, sidelong glances like arrows into their hearts, and they're becoming wounded. They're trying to suppress everything, but they can't do it very well. But anyway, here's a picture of God, and these different, surrounded by his different energies. All these different energies are all personified. So this is like a meditation they do before puja, actually. So it's a picture of God, and then all of his different energies, some representative Dharma, Artha, Karma, Moksha, this is what we're dealing with, and then the rasas, Dasha Rasa, Shantadasa, Vatsala, Madhujya. So it's a complete picture of God. You've got God himself and his energy. Parasa Shakti Avivideva. He has unlimited potency. So here is a meditation showing how God is the center, and his different manifestations of different potencies are all being manifested. So it's like a meditation. So the conclusion is that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Ara Shabda Vidya, everything else and everyone else is his servant. So this is the proper conclusion of the Srimad Bhagavatam, and the purpose of studying all the planetary systems is to come to that person who is actually the controller, the maintainer of all of these planetary systems. And in his different features he is maintaining, but for the bhaktas then he manifests his very sweet form of Madhava. And yeah, something for everyone. No matter what consciousness you are, something for everyone. Krishna will manifest exactly according to your mentality. And something for everyone in Krishna. Jai Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Samaveda Bhaktivinoda ki jai, Nitai Gopremanandi. Any comment, question? Thank you. Hare Krishna. Thank you.